Blog Talk Radio.
They tell me nothing. If we even going to have a show. Oh, good evening, Rumpf, and welcome to Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio. I have no idea what I'm mumbling about. It must be the devil inside. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and we're here along with...
Greetings and solicitations, it's CW, seeing what Diablo has in store for us tonight.
That's yeah, right, Terror is. Tales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Devil's Fortune is El Fortune Diablo, is the mine that they're actually mining. So, very good, CW.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, three terrific tales from old-time radio as we get devilish with you. Going way, way back with A Witch's Tale. Inner Sanctum Mysteries, always one of my faves. And Theater 5 with an interesting title to that one.
Yeah, and you know, another interesting thing here, Dale, is all three shows, although different years, are all from January. It's... Another thing I noticed, one was from January 1st, one was from January 13th, and then January 26th. How's that?
Wow. Coincidence? I think not.
I think not. Yeah, I think the devil set this one up.
Or as Geraldine used to say. You remember Geraldine, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
The devil made me do it. Yeah, the devil made me do it.
It's in all the names of the devil, Old Nick, Old Scratch, Sam Hill, or Hobbs, as in anyone remember that Hammer horror film, 5 million years to Earth, you know, when the grasshoppers
yes.
rule?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Terrified me as a kid.
Devil goes by many names in many places.
Yes.
Old Hob.
Old Hob.
Beelzebub. Lucifer.
Lucifer. Satan.
Astaroth.
Or Santa.
Maybe?
Yeah, or Santa. Or is it Satan? Santa, Satan. Maybe.
I don't know. I think it's a little frightening that between us, we know a lot of names for this guy. That's what troubles me.
Yeah, what's up with
that? I think you guys know him a little. You know him a little too well there.
I
know him so well,
concern.
I call him by his first name, Fred.
Fred? Yeah. I didn't know he had a first name.
Fred. His first name.
Fred
well, Santa?
Well, most people don't know that, but...
Fred Santa, or Satan.
Yeah, Fred Satan, there you are.
Fred.
Fred, turn down your music.
Freddy.
Turn off the music. Yeah, that's one way. That's one lawn the kids don't want to ever trot on. Get off my lawn. Pitchfork coming across the way.
There you go. Nothing worse than a cantankerous guy chasing you off the lawn, other than perhaps the devil himself, the personification of evil.
Evil.
And the star of our shows tonight.
Yeah. Surprised we don't have a show about politicians, isn't that? I would think that's the most devilish devil of them all, but I digress, all right?
Yeah. Mark
well,
Twain once,
I think they may be
Mark Twain
funded.
Once said, if your vote mattered, they wouldn't let you do it. I love Mark Twain.
And actually, what's fun is we have a tale from Mark Twain tomorrow night. So that's that much cooler.
Well, you know that's bound to be good because the man was a craftsman at sarcasm and just a good general good writing. So I'm looking forward to that as well. But tonight, we are shaking hands with the devil.
Well... I brought my Purell, so I should be okay.
Good. Devil's a good subject for fantasy, horror. think of how many, like, great Twilight Zone had the devil one time. At least.
I love that episode, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
David Wayne.
What about the one with William Shatner and the little...
The little devil on the fortune-telling thing. Oh, that's great. I'd love to get me one of those just for a little decorative piece.
Those are available.
I don't doubt it. They make everything.
Pretty much.
If you got money, you can get it nowadays. Well, maybe not for long, but anyway.
I was going to be all right with that. I thought I'd do some investing, and I invested in rubles. How's that going?
Rubles? Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Let's see.
Wow.
I'd say, oh.
Watch that, comrade. Maybe. Watch that business.
Wow. Yeah, Dos Pedonia, comrade there. I'd say, oh, if you've got 1 million rubles, you have just enough to make a penny, half a penny.
There you go. Yeah, well.
Something like that.
Things happen. Speaking of the devil, as we, I don't know, where will we start today? Should we start with the old and come into the new as we progress through the
evening?
Why don't
we do that? Yeah.
Yes, let's
do. Yeah, so that means we would start with the great, great grandmother of all horror hosts.
Really, if you think about it, she is old Nan herself.
Old Nancy. Yep, old Nancy.
Yep.
And
Nancy.
Started in, Nancy? I think, around about 1932 or 3 through 1939. And it just to know that this was the very first horror host that I know of any kind.
Yeah, documented, I think so, unless you start getting into literature. And but as far as modern media, from radio on up to now, old man's got to be the first. There's people that'll argue all day long who the first horror host was. But I'm running with old Nancy. She's awesome, and she's bringing us a story called The Devil's Number.
Mm-hmm. And that is from... January 13th of 1938.
Part one.
The Witch's Tale. Chilling tales told by old Nancy, the witch of Salem, and Satan, her wise black cat. They're waiting for you now.
Today? Yes, sir. 103-year-old. Well, Satan, me and you'd better plan to spin these folks a pretty little yarn tonight. Douse all them lights. That's it. Make it nice and dark and cheerful when you hear our bedtime stories. Now, draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers. Gaze into them deep, and soon you'll see the dining room of a fine old house in England. And there, on the evening of the 13th of May, begins our yarn about the devil's number. The devil's number!
Serve coffee and liqueurs in the East Room, Peters. You'll be more comfortable there.
Yes, sir.
Permit me to lead the way, Mrs. Oliver.
Certainly. What a wonderfully huge place you have here, Mr. Rockwell.
Harry, don't you wish that our home had so many rooms that we'd be compelled to designate them by points of the compass?
I'm not sure that I do when I think of Mr. Rocco's yearly cost for upkeep.
When my original ancestor built the base in 1512, and other ancestors later enlarged it, they had a very poor regard for a 20th century descendant who'd have to bear its expense in depreciated currency. Here we are. Take this chair, Mrs. Oliver.
Thank you. This house was built in 1512, you say? My, that's over 400 years ago.
Yes, its lack of modern conveniences attest to that. You know, I'm offering you very poor hospitality in exchange for the jolly entertainment you afforded me at this time last year.
Poor hospitality? After that dinner?
Well, anyone can feed his friends. But you fed me in such a delightfully original manner.
Original?
Don't you remember? By a coincidence, today's day and date are precisely similar, except for the month.
You were at my anti-superstition party.
Yes, with 13 at table, and you compelled everyone to break a mirror.
And a spill salt.
To enter the dining room, we had to walk under a ladder.
Of course you were at that mad affair.
I shall never forget it. I've gone about knocking on wood ever since. Well, I'm only joking about being superstitious, of course. Although it's bred in my British bones.
There's a coffee and a cure, sir.
Oh, yes, yes.
Will there be something else now, Mr. Rockwell?
Not for the present. I'll ring if I want you.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's a darn funny thing that we should visit your place for the first time on Friday the 13th, as you first visited us. The coincidence never occurred to me until you mentioned it.
I thought of it when I drove you down from London.
If we hadn't been detained in Liverpool, we'd have begun our visit yesterday, as we planned.
Perhaps the hoodoos I made you attend last year arranged the coincidence.
I scarcely think the hoodoos will harm us after this long time. Well, perhaps we should light a bonfire to keep them at a distance.
Light a bonfire?
Yes. Evil spirits are afraid of fire. If you look out that window, you'll see several fires which my tenants have lighted for their protection.
Your tenants? You mean modern English farmers believe seriously in the ill fortune of this day?
Whether they believe seriously or not, they take no chances. Do you know the basis for its ill fame?
Why? Because Friday was the day of crucifixion.
Yes, when evil triumphed over good, and the devil over God. 13 is the devil's number, because he was the chief of each convene of witches and wizards, which always numbered 12 in addition to himself.
Now, you've been holding out on us, Bert. We never dreamed that you were an authority on folklore.
Oh, dear me, I'm not. I'm the merest dabbler. But it is an interesting subject, don't you think?
Most interesting, particularly for today.
Would you like to see a concrete example of the 13 superstition?
A concrete example?
Yes. But first, you must assure me that you're not at all squeamish.
Not I.
Then come this way. Oh, Peters. Peters?
Yes, sir.
Fetch me a lamp or a lantern, will you?
Yes, sir.
Now, I'm taking you to the unused portion of the house. Are you sure you won't mind looking at human bones, Mrs. Oliver?
Human bones?
Very old ones. They've been in the house for nearly 3 centuries.
You keep bones in the house?
Well, they belong to an ancestor of mine. He was such a wicked old chap, the church wouldn't permit his remains to be buried in consecrated ground, so we had to find a resting place for them somewhere. Besides, he wanted them to be here.
Here's a lantern, sir.
Oh, thank you, Peters.
You're going into the old part, sir?
That's where we're headed.
Not towards the North Tower, sir.
Yes, to the crypt of old Eric.
Please don't go in there, sir. Not tonight, Mr. Rockwell.
If the old wizard starts any trouble, Peters, we'll shout and let you know.
But, Mr. Rockwell...
Come along, you two, who want to learn about superstition.
Mr. Rockwell, wait. Wait. Take this.
Oh, must I carry that prodigious weapon with me?
You've promised me you always will when you go in there, sir. Please.
Oh, very well. I'll take you now. Come along, open the door.
Yes, sir.
Give me your hand, dear. It's pretty dark in here.
Yes.
I'll leave the door open, sir, and stand here waiting, if you need me.
All right, Peter.
Your butler doesn't approve of this expedition, apparently.
No, he doesn't like the North Tower and old Eric.
Why did he insist you carry that huge revolver?
He always does when I visit the old part. He has it loaded with dum-dum bullets.
Dum-dum?
Yes, they're ordinary lead or steel-jacketed bullets, crisscrossed with a knife across the nose to make them spread on impact. Someday I shall tell him that only silver bullets are of any use against ghosts.
Ghosts?
Or disciples of witchcraft.
Now, what on earth are you taking us to see?
Merely some old bones. Watch your step. The floors aren't very sound in here. There's no rubbish to fall over.
Now, you're working up to some sort of a practical joke leading us into this darkness.
No, upon my word, I'm not. No, really. Although I do owe your wife some retaliation for having made me walk under ladders and break mirrors.
I've never been in such a spooky place.
Nor I.
These old halls beat any haunted castle I've ever read about in books.
The shadow cast upon them by Mr. Rockwell's rubbing lantern has given me the shivers.
Me too. You're getting your revenge for Judith's superstition party, Bert. But tell us about this ancestor of yours whose bones we're going to see.
Wait till we reach his resting place. Tell the more effective then. Here we are. His remains are enclosed in that little iron chest.
In the niche in that wall?
Yes. I'll open his tiny coffin.
Oh.
Here, you see all that is still earthly of Eric Rothwell, my many times great-grandfather, who was burnt at the stake by order of King James the First.
For witchcraft.
Burnt at the stake?
For witchcraft?
Yes. Members of the family bribed the official executioners and were allowed to reclaim these bones from the ashes. They sifted so diligently that only the bones of a single foot escaped their pious search. Otherwise, the skeleton of the old scoundrel lies intact within this iron box.
Why do you keep them here?
Well, I've already explained that the church refused to allocate hallowed ground for his remnants. That Eric's bones were not consumed together with his flesh was considered extremely unfortunate at the time, for it was commonly believed that they would enable him to live again.
People believe such rot as that?
People still believe it. Oh, wait till you hear all the story. Gather round me, my children, and listen. The old gentleman whose skull and assorted bones lie before us in these pretty shadows had great supernatural power. According to incontestable records, he was born in the year of 1514. He was executed in 1623.
When he was over 100 years old.
When he was 109 years old. But when he was led to the stake, he didn't look a day over 40.
Bert, are you making all this up?
Not a word of it. However, let's hear the rest of Eric's history. At his trial, it was proven that he'd murdered no less than 8 young girls.
He'd murdered?
Yes, for their blood, which he used as ingredients for a rejuvenating elixir which enabled him to defy old age.
Well, that's crazy.
I know it is, but according to the records, it worked.
But how?
Well, that the judges didn't learn. They learned he had lured young women to this house so that they might later become his victims, however. It seems he, in some way, managed to secure 13 drops of their blood, after which they became his slaves and did whatever he wished.
13 drops of blood?
The devil's number. The number which makes people fear this day, even in a so-called enlightened age. After Eric had secured that small amount of blood, the girl would become his creature. Then he would drain her arteries at leisure in his laboratory, which still exists as he left it. As a matter of fact, the old villain was probably merely a first-class hypnotist with a wide, sadistic streak. But he makes a good story for Friday the 13th, doesn't he?
Yes. But why do you keep his awful bones in your home?
A matter of tradition. We Britons are governed always by that, you know. The old boy is said to have remarked before his death that if his bones weren't collected and kept in Rockwell Manor, and that if his laboratory and implements weren't preserved intact, that the house would be destroyed. The foolish believe that he had a purpose in that command, some idea of resurrecting himself from the dead.
Mad story, isn't it?
Yeah. Now close that ghastly chest and let's go back to where it's light.
I'm for that. I brought you here for a ghostly thrill. I've given myself the shivers.
Don't close the chest yet. Hold that lantern so I can look.
Judith, I never knew before that you possessed a morbid streak.
I didn't either. But those bones, that grinning skull, they fascinate me.
You're bearing out the legend, Mrs. Oliver. Old Eric was noted for fascinating women. But I'll close the chest now, if you don't mind. And we'll go back.
Yes, dear. I'm ready for another glass of burnt brandy.
Wait, please. Let me close the chest.
If you wish.
Oh.
Dear, what's wrong?
Oh, I cut my finger on that rusty iron.
Hey, hold that lantern here, Bert.
Oh, I see your finger's bleeding.
Hey, I'll bind it with my handkerchief.
Don't bother. It's just a scratch.
Good Lord.
What's the matter?
Her blood has fallen on that skull.
Why should that?
Count those drops, Harry.
I make 13. The devil's number. 13 drops of blood on the wizard's skull.
Be back with old Nancy, her kitty Satan, and this wonderful tale from the witch's tale.
Originally, these were 15-minute broadcasts, and the next week they would pick up the part two of it. And sometimes Alonzo Dean Cole would be writing more, adding to it as they were performing it. He was also one of the, he and his wife were two of the actors as well. Now, this is one, you can catch it a little bit in their voice. This is one that came from Australia. There are more of the Australian recordings available than U.S. recordings because Alonzo Dean Cole, in a rage because he didn't feel there would ever be a market for them, destroyed all of the original acetates that he had of each and every episode.
That's a devilish thing to do.
A devilish thing indeed.
The devil made him do it.
Indeed.
That was horrible. But do we know who played Nancy in this one, Dave?
I don't know, because I'm pretty sure this is one from Australia. So, and you can hear it in some of their voices. They very much straighten out their things, but sometimes, especially when you're talking low, you can kind of catch a little bit of the Aussie lilt in there. So,
yes, I think they're trying to British up their Aussie accent a tad, the proper upper crust sort of British language they're going across. Most definitely. Well, just
the Aussies are trying to go South African on us. Yeah.
Oh, indeed. Australia. Hot as Hades in some places. It's all over there.
Yes.
Yes. And every devilish little beastie trying to eat you. For the Kolchak, Carl Kolchak fans, remember the episode The Devil's Platform? Since the devil was the theme of the night, most definitely. That was a one. And
I believe he
did. And you picked that one out because he was a politician, right?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, yes, I did. I am on a rant tonight about the Politico.
I believe Satan made his way onto Lost in Space in one episode, too.
Oh, he did.
Really?
Oh, he
covers a lot of ground.
Yes, yeah. He did. He had something of a crush on Judy, I believe.
Of course.
Don
did not take that very well.
Nope. The Prince of Darkness, with all due respect to Dracula, that was the devil. Mephistopheles, another name for him. And just for people who have a need to quench a thirst for tonight, I found an interesting recipe made with Devil's Sisters Whiskey. That's Devil's Sisters Whiskey. It's a real whiskey. You get an icy cold frosted Moscow Mule. You're the one who mentioned rubles, Dave. Get a Moscow Mule mug. A Moscow Mule mug with one part of Devil's Sisters Whiskey, two parts ginger beer, a splash of fresh pineapple juice, a splash of fresh lime juice, twirl it around and crack the ice with a slice of lime, and you'll be singing the Dosvidaniya Blues all night long.
The Dosvidaniya Blues, I love it. I love it. That sounds like a nice treat, too. I'll make one now.
Yeah. You wake up a week from Thursday. Yeah.
Yes, and you definitely will say the devil made you do it.
Yep.
That's what I'm looking for, an excuse for all my foul and evil behaviors.
Ah, yes, we are Legion, another name for the devil.
Yes. And such great films with the devil, too. One of my favorites is, because I love Pacino and The Devil's Advocate.
Oh, that was amazing. Him, Keanu Reeves, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
We'll have to get the old book.
Really?
Egg, sausage, and bacon, egg and spam.
Oh,
sorry, we're broadcasting from a diner.
Bacon,
sausage,
and
spam.
What have I unleashed?
Bacon, sausage, and spam. Spam, egg, spam, spam, bacon, and spam. Spam, sausage, spam.
All right,
spam,
all right, that'll be about enough of that, young lady. Mm-hmm. We'll order our spam sandwiches later.
That's my fault. Dale was not acclimated to the spam, spam, spam sketch of the world-famous, infamous Monty Python troupe. So now he is thoroughly acclimated.
Yes. I have been edumacated.
He's been totally edumacated, acclimated, and insinuated.
Indoctrinated. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah.
That's a little difficult with me, but... Anywho, we got more radio, don't we? Sure, why not part two?
We got lots of radio.
A whole lot of radio.
Mm-hmm.
Lot. Let's go on with part two of The Devil's Number from The Witch's Tale.
Honestly, Harry, if we hadn't known Mr. Rockwell for so long as the steadiest sort of person, I'd think he's a little mad.
Quiet, dear. His room's next to ours. He might hear you. He certainly became upset about that blood, didn't he?
His face was whiter than a sheep when we came out of that darkness into the lighted hall.
And so was his butler's when he heard what had happened. It was strange, though, that you should cut your finger and that just 13 drops of blood should fall upon those bones after what Bert had told us.
Yes. There were just 13 drops.
Exactly. I counted them. They all fell on top of the scuff, and it absorbed them like blotting paper.
Coincidence, wasn't it?
Yes. If there was any superstition in my makeup, I'd have been more shaky about it than Bert.
Why? Would you think my blood could restore the old wizard to life?
Oh, that's ridiculous. Why did you want to close that closet, Judith?
I don't know. Just a mood, I guess.
Well, I'm tired. Let's go to bed.
All right. I'd better remove the handkerchief you bound around my finger and wash it thoroughly before I take off my dress. I don't want bloodstains on this new gown.
No, I'll put some iodine on that cut.
Harry.
Huh?
This is funny.
What?
There's no blood on either my finger or the handkerchief.
No?
Yet the cut was bleeding profusely when you bound it.
Let's see.
Look.
That is funny.
The wound seems to have closed after those 13 drops.
Evidently.
Another coincidence, isn't it?
The cut's a tiny one. It's not remarkable that so little blood flowed from it.
Harry, there's still another coincidence that I haven't mentioned to you.
What do you mean?
When I reached out to close the lid of that chest, it fell upon my hand before I touched it.
Before you touched it?
Yes, it seemed to leap at me.
Now, look here, Judith. You're not letting Rockwell's story of that old sawdust affect your good sense. You're not beginning to believe there's anything supernatural between this trifling accident?
No, of course not. I'll take off my dress and we'll go to bed.
We'd better. Bert's servants will be calling us for breakfast at 7.
Look out this window. The farmers are still keeping their bonfires to drive the evil things away.
Yeah, the idiots.
For hundreds of years, they've believed the powers of hell are strong on this day of the devil's number.
Dear, what's the matter with you?
Oh, this huge, spooky old house, I guess, and this old country. I'm being silly. Unhook my dress, dear.
I should say you are being silly. Now hold still.
What's that?
What?
Outside in the hall. Listen.
Sounds like footsteps. Footsteps of a lame man.
Yes. It stopped outside our door.
Well, I wonder who... Well, I haven't seen any lame servants about the place.
Now the steps are passing on.
Why should they have stopped here? I'm going to see.
No, don't open that door.
Judith, let me go.
Don't open that door.
What's the matter with you?
Those steps came from where we saw that chest of bones from which your foot is missing.
Harry, let me in. Bert, open the door. I'm going to talk to you quickly. Why, what's wrong?
Did you hear footsteps in this hall?
Yes.
They stopped outside this door and then went on.
I didn't imagine it, and I didn't.
Oh, what's wrong with you? Wasn't it one of your servants out there?
This thing with a single foot, does it sound to you like a living human?
No. Didn't.
Have you both gone crazy?
I think I have. For ever since your wife's blood fell on those ghastly bones, I've been like a timid child in the dark. And since those footsteps came and went, I'm frankly terrified.
Sure.
Don't call me a fool, a coward, a man, I can't help it. I've got to see others walking in this hall.
Bird, come back here.
He's running towards that tower.
Your man's out of his mind.
You've got to stop him. It was from there those footsteps came.
Oh, the footsteps won't hurt him, but he's liable to fall through a hole in those rotten floors without a light. I'll get him.
Harry, don't leave me.
Nothing's going to hurt you. Call the servants. Tell them to bring lanterns. I'll never be able to find Bird in this infernal blackness. Bird! Bird!
Yes, yes.
Uncle! Uncle! Peter! Peter! Come here, quick! Oh. Please, don't scream! Gaze into my eyes and obey whatever I tell thee.
You have no eyes. I see only a grinning skull. An awful skeleton that walks...
You will see what my will demands. You will see the man I was in life.
You are a man. I see that now. A man who wears a strange, ancient clothes. A man who has lost a foot.
Thou shalt act as my will demands. Thou shalt help me to become indeed a living man, ye see.
No.
Yes.
No.
The devil my master hath given thee to me. Come, come, I lead. Ye follow.
I follow.
Follow me and learn my master's power. Follow me and learn the magic of 13 drops of blood.
Bones are missing from their chest, Harry. They're gone.
Someone's playing a practical joke.
Those bones are gone because the legend's true. Because your wife's blood has brought that monster back to life.
Oh, stop that, or you'll make me as crazy as you are. Now, leave me out of this darkness. I've got to see Judy. I've got to know that she's all right.
Wait, did you hear that?
What?
I heard a door close. Back in the old North Tower.
Why, I thought I did, too.
That's where Eric had his laboratory, where he went his filthy magic.
Well, if we did hear a door, I'll not believe a dead hand closed it. What a fool I was to leave Judy.
Oh, she'll be all right. Don't pay any heed to my imbecile hysteria, old man. Come on, here's the passage that leads to the lighted hall. You can see your door from here.
Yeah, it's standing open where I left it. Judith probably has the servants with her now. Judith! Judy, dear! I found Bert and brought him back. Judith, why won't you answer me? Judith! Judith!
She's not here. The room's empty. Good Lord!
What are you staring at, Bert? What?
Look, impressed in this carpet. It's the footprint of a skeleton, of a single bony foot.
That door we heard closed.
Julie, quick to the tower, man! The tower!
Come. We have little time to waste, my dear. Soon thy husband and the present master of this house will note thy absence and seek thee in this laboratory. But there is time enough. There is time enough for that which thou wilt do.
What must I do?
First, thou must prepare an altar to my master. For fear of the curse, they have left this chamber quite unchanged. In the scrollwork of yonder well, thou wilt find a carven serpent. Go, press its head.
I press.
Yes. A pillar opens. Put thy hand inside and draw forth two black candles. Black for the worship of my master. Now, place them here. Place them here.
They are placed.
Now, from the sacred cupboard, take the tinder box and light them. Oh, my hands. Oh, Satan. They're still useless for thy work. They are hands of the dead. And have no strength nor power. But thou hast restored my will. Hast given me the means for my hands. Soon by her death, thou shalt give me back my life, O Satan.
The candles are lighted.
Bring forth yon earthen basin now. And the flask that lies beside it. Unstop the flask and pour its contents in the bowl. It's the holy oil of hell. Oil from fat of newborn babes. Place it here between the candles. Now from the cupboard. Take yon keen-edged knife, and with it in thy hand, recline upon the altar. Thou art to be the sacrifice. Why, thy husband comes, but he will be too late.
The door's locked. Why wouldn't I dare do it? Answer me!
I'll not. Lie thou on the altar.
I do as you command.
No. I heard her voice. She's in there!
The clock! The dead is in there, too! The dead shall soon be alive! Warm blood shall enter his bones and the flesh again!
He means hunger!
Get on that! Break down the door! Break it!
Help
us! Raise thy knife, woman, and strike it to thy heart!
Oh, do it! Do it!
Hurry!
Raise not his voice! Obey it not! Obey me!
Oh, Lord, he left it to me!
Give me from this woman. Make her give me all the flame within her veins.
No! Oh, whatever!
I call on hell! Strike, woman! Strike!
I open.
The door's open.
Strike!
Strike!
I tried.
Stop her! Woman, turn thy blade on them who say
I can't hold it in all the strength of hell.
Stop him! Strike!
Strike! She's happy!
Back! A knife through my arm! I have thy blood. Thou too will be in my power.
Don't let those bony hands touch that arm. You'll be under his spell as she is.
I can't. My blood. Just that enough. And the toy at me.
I've got a knife. Now, look out. I've knocked the light of candle in his oil.
The oil is spreading flames all around the room.
Fire is the only way to stop this monster. The one way to destroy him.
Not if he escapes. He's out of the flames.
He's out the door.
The woman still remains my slave. Her blood yet will give me life.
Stop him, man. Stop him.
You have a gun. The one thing will give you. Shoot.
11 bullets won't destroy a thing of hell.
We have nothing else. He's going away with Judith. Try.
I'll try, but there's no hope.
Stop them. Fallen in a scattered heap of bones.
Harry.
Judith, come. Coming back to me. The devil's spell is lifted from her.
Oh, Harry. Harry, darling.
My dear.
But leaden bullets couldn't destroy a thing of hell. They couldn't.
You said the dum-dum bullets in that pistol were made by cutting a cross upon the notebook.
A cross? Yes, a cross. The sign of heaven.
We must get out of here and rouse the servants. Those flames can't be stopped now. And soon this house will fall as old Eric prophesied.
Wait. Listen.
The clock is striking. Midnight.
The devil's day is over.
You folks look out for Friday the 13th when it comes your way.
Satan, good kitty.
Okay.
Nice one. All that energy that they had in the studio when they were doing that, I mean, it was coming through the broadcast. I mean, the last parts, all that shouting and everything. I mean, I don't know. I can imagine them scurrying all over the place to do the action, even though it's just radio.
Oh yeah, I think you can emote and deliver your lines more powerfully if you play them out. Absolutely. I would bet that a number of voice actors have done that.
I know that in the second radio stage we did, the two actresses at the end is a tearful goodbye between a mother and her daughter. The two were literally in tears during the broadcast, literally.
That's awesome.
Wow.
It sure made it that much more real, that's for sure.
I think that's awesome. Not just because of the acting part, but I just like making women cry.
Yes, you do.
You are a little imp, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm a mean, mean man. Ask around.
And speaking of mean, some songs that are an homage to the Dark One himself. Don't forget The Devil Went Down to Georgia. One by Alice Cooper called Devil's Food, and The Devil in Disguise by Elvis. Devil with a blue dress on.
Blue dress, yes.
Yes, and Running with the Devil by Van Halen.
Yes. Yeah,
he did.
As a former disc jockey, you have humbled me.
Yes, that is my task in life, so to do. To him, bow down
to me. Touché.
There you are.
Touché.
Yeah. Genuflecting is encouraged.
I am a beaten man. Beaten down.
Yeah. Feel free to genuflect anytime.
Yeah. I am genuflecting on radio. Except I might not get back on.
I feel say, you got to be careful that day. We're getting to that age. That,
I know.
It's easy to get down. It's not so easy to get back up again. Yeah.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
I don't mean to mock religion, but I grew up Catholic, and I remember when people started getting older, the kneeling wasn't quite as, you know, there was that old guy kneel or old gal kneel. It's just like, yeah, okay, that's kind of a half of a, I'm good, because I can't get up if I go all the way down.
I think it's more North America more than anything else, well, most of North America, for example, and parts of Asia where, well, let's take Japan, for example. You're accustomed to, if you're going the traditional route, and considering housing there is super expensive, even more than California, you have a little flat. So, yeah, you do eat on the floor, and you learn to get up, and you keep doing that until you're 106 years old.
Yeah.
So you're kind of
that's a little rough on the knees.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's also rough, Dale, is that we didn't give one of Gar's four morals in Finland.
Oh.
And I bet you thought I wasn't ready. But I was. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Who's got this one?
You do.
Who's got this
one? I'm not touching them anymore.
I got it. There's more mathematician to wizards than magic. The trick is being able to tell the difference.
Gar is with us even when he's not with us.
Well, it wouldn't be that way if you would clean up the dungeon like you're supposed to.
True. I'm a lousy housekeeper.
take that witch's broom and sweep the place out once in a blue moon, you know?
Yeah,
as long as you get Mickey's magic broom there, because then you end up flooding the basement again. Again.
True.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, and thanks, Foggs, for the we missed a few songs that Foggs mentioned in there in the chat room.
Indeed.
Yeah,
the
devil's child. Deal with the devil. Devil inside.
Sympathy for the Devil, a great song by the Rolling Stones.
Stones, yep. Yep. And, oh, yeah.
Used very effectively in A Devilish Story. Do you remember Fallen with Denzel Washington and John Goodman?
Yes. What an insidious movie. That was so
yes.
good. And speaking
Indeed.
Of movies, don't forget Lon Chaney Jr. in The Devil's Messenger.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, which was actually a combination of three different episodes of 13 Demon Street.
Yep.
Oh, was it? I didn't know that.
Yes, it was.
Got me on that one. And, of course, the beautiful musical Damn Yankees.
Oh, yeah, The Devil, that's right. Yep, Devil brought up Lola to entice those
whatever
guys.
Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets.
Yeah, we've had some
who
great...
Played the devil, who played the devil in the movie and in the on Broadway?
Oh, My Favorite Martian.
Ray Walston.
Ray Walston.
Yes.
Ray Walston,
Ray Walston.
My Favorite Martian. Yep. Yep.
Definitely.
He would make a good devil. I can picture him.
He would.
He did.
He could do it. Oh, and a favorite movie of mine with Peter Fonda and Laura Parker from Dark Shadows is Race with the Devil.
The Devil.
And that is really a movie that gets under your skin. I think R.G. Armstrong is in that movie as well, if I'm not mistaken.
We'll have to check those out. But we got more radio, don't we, today?
We
Indeed.
Do. Yep.
Indeed.
Time to head up as we're moving up in time to Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Sanctum Mysteries. We've got The Devil's Fortune tonight for you.
This is another one that I heard from the library back in my troubled teens.
You had troubled teens?
Oh, well, I meant troubled jeans. I couldn't get them on right. Yeah.
Okay. no one has troubled teens. Teenagers get everything right all the time.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
ask them.
It's what I told my kids when they were teenagers. It's what you learn after you know it all that really matters, you know.
Yep. When you're 16, you realize what an idiot your father is, and then you can't understand how he got smart so fast by the time you're 26.
That's right. He must have taken some schooling or something, you know?
Yeah, how the heck did that happen? But we digress collectively, I think. Let's begin.
Yes.
Part 1 of Inner Sanctum Mysteries, The Devil Fortune, originally broadcast.
January 31th of 1949.
31?
Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in, come in. I've been reading my fan mail. Huh? Oh, sure, I get lots of it. Delivered in a hearse every morning. One lonely heart writes, despite your sinister voice, you strike me as a fine gentleman and a homebody. I am companionable, good-natured, unmarried, and I've been hardly dead a year. Won't you please exchange photographs, signed, Lonesome. Did somebody say the lady spooked out of turn?
Hello?
Tonight's Inner Sanctum mystery, The Devil's Fortune, was written by John Robert and stars Carl Swenson in the role of Tracy with Charles Irving as McNamara.
And now for tonight's chaos. In the deep hinterland of Mexico, on the ground level over a mine shaft, a ceremony is being performed by a frightened group of men. A ceremony of fear. Drums beat, and a roaring fire licks up the night sky. Underground in the mine called El Fortuna Diablo, the Devil's Fortune, floodwaters rise slowly to choke off all life in the shaft. Clinging to the elevation of a ledge, trapped and at bay, with the waters lapping at his ankles, is a young man. His expression is desperate as he fires a gun into the subterranean shadows at an unseen target.
Give me a break, Mac. I got a right to live.
You're wasting bullets, Tracy. You better come out with your hands up or drown. I'm waiting just around the air.
Yeah, with your gun cocked ready to shoot me down.
Just waiting. Take all the time you need making up your mind, Tracy. Choose the way you
want to
die.
Choose the way I want to die. Mac will get me even if it costs him his own life. Mac happened to me in a furnished room across the border in El Paso. I came out of a stupor one morning, opened my eyes blearily, and there was Big Mac sitting on a chair. Hey, who are you, mister?
Never mind, kid. Right now, you're more interested in the third man in the room.
Third man?
Over there, propped in the corner, with a knife stuck in his chest.
What?
Recognize him?
Yeah, sure. Coombs. We were making the rounds together last night. Who killed him?
You did. Check the knife. See if it's yours. I'll give you the details, kid. At about 2 a.m., you got into a quarrel with Coombs outside the Hotel Navajo. I happened to be around, taking it all in. You're a mining engineer, but you haven't worked in a year. You were stewing over your hard luck. You took it out on Coombs.
It's hard to believe that...
Take the corpse's pulse, and then believe it. You blacked out, and I hustled you both up here.
Why?
To give you a choice. Either I call the cops, or the three of us go for a ride. We'll dump Coombs somewhere, and then the two of us push on into the interior of Mexico. Is it a deal?
Why are you helping me? What's in it for you, Mr.
McNamara. You're a crack mine engineer. I need a crack mine engineer that I can trust. Your knife in Coombs means I can trust you anytime, anywhere.
We dumped Coombs, and 2 days later, we were 500 miles inside Mexico. Mac?
Huh?
I've been thinking. That story that you palmed off on me about Coombs, you stuck that knife in him.
Maybe. But you'll never be able to prove it now.
Mac, you're crazy.
And you're soft. Soft and sentimental. The world's an anthill. Knifing Coombs was like stepping on an ant. Get tough, Tracy. Think big.
How big?
This big. I've got a map here. Yeah. Read off the name.
El Fortuno Diablo.
An abandoned gold mine just outside a native village called Alicante. All boxed in and boarded up. Hasn't been worked in 20 years. A fortune's been laying around begging for takers.
Well, why hasn't anybody worked the mine?
Fright. They're all petrified with fright. From the owner, a chump named Parento, right on down the line to everybody in town. There's a legend about the mine that scared them. The devil is supposed to make his headquarters there.
Hey, the map is spotted with blood. Whose blood is that, Mac?
The chump who had the map previous to me. Called himself Klondike. He lay there, drooling over the map, whispering to himself about El Fortuno Diablo. Week in and week out, month after month, I listened to Klondike whispering to himself.
Lay there. Lay where, Mac?
I had to break his hand open to get the map out of his fingers.
Where were you, Mac?
I'll tell you sometime, Tracy. Sometime when you get out of line, maybe, you'll wish I hadn't told you.
We reached Alicante, bleak, backward village, where civilization came trickling in slowly by donkey cart over narrow mountain passes.
From here on, kid, watch me operate.
How are you going to get El Fortuno Diablo?
Steal it. We steal the mine from a Senor Parento, that owner I told you about. It's all fixed. Tonight, Parento's being told the hoodoo is off the mine and that he's a dope not to cut me in as a partner and start operating El Fortuno Diablo full blast.
Who's telling all this to Parento?
The one guy he'll listen to and believe. What passes for the village wise man in these parts? A joker named Montesano. Montesano has this town organized. Like Al Capone used to operate in Cicero. Everybody's scared not to listen to Montesano.
Well, why will Montesano play ball with you?
A gun in his ribs and $500 in his palm. Just you watch how Montesano plays ball.
I watched Montesano bat a home run for McNamara. We were in a room with Montesano, Parento, and a sharp-nosed fella named Salvador. Salvador acted as a sort of bodyguard, advisor, and local technical expert to Parento.
You will work the mine, Parento. You and the Senor McNamara.
Boy, they're legenda del Diablo.
The curse is no more. When your father was killed, he put the 20-year curse on El Fortuno Diablo. And now the time is over.
Boy, the man, they will not work the mine. In all Alicante, I can find nobody to work the mine.
You will tell everybody in Alicante and in the mountains that Montesano say it is good to work the mine.
Machinery trickled in by cart over the mountain passes. Fearful workers grumblingly responded to Montesano's call. The shafts were rebuilt. The mine began operating. The end of the first week, McNamara played his trump card. He stole the mine. It was Sunday, the day off. Parento and his man Salvador had just left the conference with Mac. Mac was laughing. The kind of laugh that meant he was grinding his heels into an anthill again.
Happy days, Tracy.
You've pushed your master plan another foot forward, huh?
Oh, my old Tracy. Yeah, take a gander at this. It's a contract for purchase. For a dollar and other valuable considerations, Parento signs the whole mine over to Mr. McNamara.
Parento signed it?
Yeah, he did. But he thought he was signing a requisition for supplies from Tampico. I pulled the old document switch on him.
Mac, that's an outright steal. Parento will call you a liar and a thief.
He'll never get that chance, Tracy.
Mac, what are you up to with Parento?
Parento and his stooge, Salvador, have just gone into the mine for an administrative look around. At my suggestion. And Tracy, I've got a hunch they're going to meet up with that El Diablo.
Mac, what have you done?
Those other valuable considerations I gave Parento. They were a couple of lunchboxes. Packed nice and appetizing with chicken sandwiches and hot drinks. In just 1 minute, I'm going to pull the steam whistle cord so that Parento and Salvador get the idea that it's noontime and they're hungry. Mm-hmm. Minutes up.
Mac, what's the connection? Well, what if lunchboxes got... Mac!
Now you're smartening up, kid. The box is open on a wire like a booby trap. Reach for a sandwich and smoke gets in your eyes.
Mac, I'm not going to let you blow up.
Freeze, chump. This is a gun in your ribs.
You're itching to throw in with Parendo and Salvador.
Matt!
Parendo and Salvador got hungry. Now we're really in the mining business, Tracy. Big.
Hi, this guy's the devil himself.
Yeah, who needs a devil with that guy around?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty sinister all on his own. Without the Dark One.
It'd be
cool if he visited with us tonight.
Yes,
I think it could happen, Dale. It just could happen.
We've had him here in the past, as I recall, quite some time ago.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's back when we did the Saturday Night Talk Show.
Yes, and we had Ormsby host also join us somewhere around that time.
I got you.
Just a coincidence.
So funny.
Just a coincidence.
Yeah.
That the devil showed up around the time Ormsby did. Just a coincidence. Nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, this is not the demon you're looking for. Move along.
There you go. You got it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Yeah. Just the gatekeeper and the key master and Zool. Nobody else. Own the state.
Nobody else.
Man. Go on. There you go.
Zool. I like Zool. And I like old time radio and this story tonight.
Yep.
A good Raymond and a good story.
Most definitely. Oh, and hi again to GGSI Paper in the chat room, as well as Fogs, of course.
Yeah.
Yep, and it's Mr. and Mrs. GCI Paper in tonight. So welcome both.
Oh, cool.
Look at all these great offerings. Devil's Night by the Black Belt, Devil's Haircut, Devil's Daughter by Ozzy, Devil's Mouth, Ian Asbury, Marijuana the Devil Flower by Johnny Rice.
Ooh.
How about Hell's Bells? ECB?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Forgot about that one.
Shout at the Devil, Motley Crue. And Iron Maiden, 666, sit down for all the beast. Oh! Sorry, had a Sam Kinison flashback there. I'll recover someday.
Someday. But not tonight.
No, there's way too much cool stuff going on to recover.
Absolutely. And, oh, don't forget Golden Earring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Yeah, forgot about them.
Ooh. Yeah. You mean they did something
iconic...
more than just Radar Love? Wow.
Oh, and don't forget Help, I'm Stepping Into the Twilight Zone. This Is a Madhouse, Feels Like Being Cloned. That is forever in pop culture.
You just can't get away from the devil.
No, indeed. He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
I haven't been able to anyway, yeah.
Like Chicken Man. He's everywhere. Maybe Chicken Man
he's
is
everywhere,
the devil.
Yes.
Chicken Man really is the devil.
No, he's Benton Harbor.
Same thing. It was one hell of a show. Well, let's wrap up The Devil's Fortune from Inner Sanctum.
One thing about that McNamara, he's a doer. He follows through to the other guy's end. Quite a yawn heating up, We're 10 minutes out and 3 stiffs already. Now, there's a lopsided chemical formula for you. The more characters chilled, the hotter the story. Poor Tracy. What do you bet he wishes he never went to engineering college? He never dreamed his school diploma would be a certificate for burial. Well, let's get back to the devil's playground, shall we?
When the bodies came out of El Fortuno Diablo, Mac and I were out walking. The idea was the Sunday explosions happened mysteriously while we were away. That night at the hospital, I talked to the local doc.
Poor Parento. We didn't even find enough of him to make a decent burial.
Oh. Blown to bits. And Salvador?
Well, with Salvador, it was a miracle, Senor Tracy. Salvador lives, but not his face. Now, when the bandages come off one day, it will not be the face of the Salvador we knew. Just like his mind, poor Salvador left his face behind him in El Fortuno Diablo.
Parento blown to bits and Salvador with his head swathed in bandages. McNamara's master plan was going great. Now the mine worked full blast, round the clock, day and night. Montesano was on hand when needed, telling everybody the hex was off, keeping the men in line for Mac. The men were working overtime, but so was the accident emergency bell connecting the shaft to the shack we supervised from. The bell meant an injury, or worse.
Tracy, if it's another casualty, I'll fry somebody in oil. We're running a mining operation, not a hospital.
It wasn't a hospital case this time. It was a case for the coroner. In the mine shaft, face upward, with his eyes fixed and unwinking, lay a miner, Miguelito.
All of a sudden, Senores Miguelito, he let out a cry and dropped to the ground. I live a thousand años and I never forget Miguelito's cry.
What killed him, Tracy?
Well, nothing apparent, Mac. No wound, nothing. Shock, I'd say, from the look on his face.
It was El Diablo. El Diablo coming for Miguelito. His face is black and standing from the side of his head, I see horns.
Not that line of talk, Manuelo. You're scaring the men. Scared men don't mind gold.
Señor McNamara, is it true? It was the devil who come before Miguelito. See? Look dead to the ground. El Diablo left his footprints.
We looked, and there, clearly defined in the soft dirt, was a print. A hoof print.
Mac, it's a hoof. It's a cloven hoof.
Tracy, so help me, if you blow your top in front of the men. Miguelito had a heart attack, man. He was just a kid, not up to being a miner. Now everybody back to work.
And the men went back to mining for gold. And the emergency bell kept ringing.
Tracy.
Yes?
Go fetch that Alicante wise man. Tell Montesano the men need another spiel about how the devil has called it quits and the hoodoo's off the mine.
Has the devil called quits, Mac?
Tracy, you blow your top and I'll blow your head off. I'm here to mine gold. If I have to kill every mother's son of you and work the mine myself.
How do you explain the four murdered men, then?
Bad hearts, the 24-hour shift. Maybe the men got to brawling among themselves down there. It's easier to blame a killing on the devil than face a murder rap. Now what?
That's the fire bell. Fire, man. Another omen of disaster. Your gold mine is going up in smoke.
Mine was a raging inferno. Mac ran around like a wild man, barking orders, working with superhuman energy.
Get that equipment going. Beat the fireman and I'll double everybody's pay.
Hey, Oscar, hurry!
You let the fire get out of control and lose the mine, and I'll sing every living one of you a farewell lullaby with this.
Mac was threatening them with a sample submachine gun spray. He meant mass murder, and the men knew it.
Yeah, you're slowing up, man. Maybe a little music will give you more inspiration.
It was an impossible task, but the men got the fire out. Tracy.
Yes?
About those hoof prints around the mine, the cloven hoof. I've been giving it a lot of thought.
I thought those things didn't bother you.
Not like they bother you, chump. They bother me another way. To me, it's a gimmick. And I get nervous if I can't figure out how a gimmick operates.
A gimmick? I don't get you.
We'll take a walk tonight, the two of us. And I'll show you what I figured out. I've been playing timekeeper to the devil for a week now.
clocking him in and clocking him out. We took that walk with the wind at our back. We hauled up outside a deserted mud house located halfway between El Fortuna Diablo and the town.
According to my timepiece, the devil is 2 minutes late.
Mac, you're not making sense.
Now, have yourself a look at the devil, Tracy.
Shh.
The devil was walking stealthily toward the door of the mud house. He looked just like Manuelo had described him. Black from head to foot, horns rising from his skull, and feet formed into hooves. We watched him enter the house.
Yeah, Tracy, you've seen the devil before your time. Now we scram as quiet as we can get.
Mac, what does it mean?
It's a gimmick, and a smart cookie's got a monopoly on it. Scare the bejabers out of everybody, knock heads together, knock a few guys off, and then sell protection. I watched Capone work that gimmick in Cicero once. I'm being sold protection.
Yeah, but who?
One guess, chump.
Montesano.
Yeah, Montesano in his costume getup. Montesano tells the men the hex is off El Fortuno Diablo for a fee. And then scares them all over again and gets me to cough up some more.
And you're letting him get away with it?
Sure. I'm not letting him on yet. I like a man who thinks big, like friend Montesano. Besides, the men listen to him. And I'm still here to mine gold.
Mac was there to mine gold one way or another at any cost. But he wasn't going to get any gold.
What's the story of the sampling, Tracy?
You're not getting any gold. All El Fortuno Diablo has for you is this. Salt. You haven't got a gold mine, Mac. You've got a salt mine.
You keep the report under your hat, Tracy. Mine operations will go on exactly as they are.
It's crazy. The salt isn't worth the transportation.
We're not mining salt. We're mining for gold.
Mac, there isn't a grain of gold,
I tell you. We're mining for gold, Tracy. For a year, I lay on my back watching Klondike drool over that map, listening to him whisper about El Fortuno Diablo. For a year, scrapped down tight so I couldn't move a muscle or wiggle a finger. But I could use my ears, Tracy, and my brain. We're mining gold. Gold, Tracy.
You lay on your back, Mac, strapped down. Where were you laying on your back?
You really want to know?
Yeah.
I told you once that maybe sometime you'd wish I hadn't told you. It was in the Meadowbrook Hospital for the criminally insane.
We were to continue mining for gold. A madman was intent on mining gold even if there wasn't any gold. A killer with the delusion that he'd picked up in an insane asylum was insisting on operations as usual. And the emergency bell rang as usual.
Señor Tracy, just now El Diablo was in the mine with my own eyes. I see him.
Who got it this time?
Montesano. El Diablo came up to the great Montesano and strangled him.
Montesano? It's impossible. Montesano was your Diablo.
Señor, what are you saying?
I don't know. I don't know anything. Manuelo.
Si, señor.
If you value your life, ride into the first town you can find that has anything like a police force. Get them here. Drag them here.
For what reason, señor?
McNamara's a crazy, cold-blooded murderer. You've all been working yourselves to death, digging for gold in a salt mine. You're all his prisoners. And any minute, we'll all be his victims. Now hurry, Manuelo. Hurry.
Si, señor, Tracy. Si.
Manuelo didn't get far. Mac stopped him outside. Then he came after me. I ran in panic into the mine. Here, in the trap. The waters are rising. Mac's around an L somewhere in the tunnel, waiting in ambush. And I have got a choice. Drown or meet Mac's bullets head on.
Tracy, your time's running out.
Mac, I got a right to live.
You blabbed to Manuelo, and he spread the word. I told you I came here to mine gold. You blast, Commander.
There isn't any gold.
I want my scraps free at Meadowbrook and strangled Klondike to get that map. I shot up a Kansas bank to get the money to buy mining equipment. All that so I could mine gold. You hear, Tracy? Mine gold!
Matt! What happened, Matt?
I'm hit, Tracy. You got me!
Darn liar! I didn't even fire!
The trick. It's a trick to lure me out. Matt shot into the air to confuse me. He's there behind an L where I can't see him in ambush.
Matt! Matt!
He cannot hear you, Señor Tracy. Mac, he's dead.
El Diablo. It's the devil standing there. Like Manuelo described him, black from head to floor with horns rising from his skull. How many devils are there around here? First Montesano, now you?
Montesano is a faker. He sees tribute, he do many things. Kill many men. I have come to know, Señor, that there is no Diablo.
No devil? You're not standing there, huh?
But I am real, Señor. Behind this face, I am Parento.
Parento? They couldn't even find enough of you for a decent burial.
For Salvador, they could not find. In the hospital, the doctor agreed that Parento will drive the devil from El Fortuno Diablo. And the police agree Parento will be their deputy.
You killed Montesano and McNamara?
Si, senor. What is so funny, senor?
McNamara. I was thinking of Matt's master plan. He never figured that booby trap he planted in your lunchbox would blow up in his face.
A porter in a gold-buying service once swept this crack into a refuse pile. Many a body loses his mind. Good thing Tracy came out of it all okay. What do you bet when he comes out of shock, he puts his diploma into half? The way Mac framed him, I'd say Tracy was more engineered than engineer. So Montesano, the Al Capone of Alicante, got his unexpectedly. The only thing he'll collect from now on is dust.
Be with us again next week at this same time for another Inner Sanctum Mystery. This program was originally heard in the United States over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, and has been rebroadcast for servicemen and women overseas through the facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
CW do the next moral.
Okay.
Hey, guess what? CW actually is ready to do it.
Okay. Don't tell Dale then.
Scrolling.
Don't tell Dale.
He He's scrolling. Don't tell the audience.
What? Yeah. What? What are you not supposed to tell me?
Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Pitching for Gar, greed is an empty hand that can never be filled unless you have the winning lottery ticket. Paraphrase, there you go, bing bong.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Sorry about that, Gar, just threw that in.
All these morals to keep the devil at bay.
And we have to keep, we have to get these morals from Gar because we don't have enough morals for ourselves. So,
yeah.
Lacking morals. More or less.
Another devilish movie, The Omen.
Yeah,
there you go. And Rosemary's Baby. And Rosemary's Baby.
Devil and Miss Jones.
Devil and Miss Jones. Oh my God. Yep.
Wow.
We know where your misspent youth was outside of the library listening to tapes.
Yeah, they didn't have those in the library. I don't know why I couldn't find that one in the library. Huh.
Why? My goodness. How narrow-minded of a local library.
But yeah, they let you on the internet to view anything you want.
Yep.
Now.
And then some.
Even play old-time radios shows.
Yes. You could do that. Or better yet, Eerie House Radio.
Yeah. So now we're cruising all the way into the 60s with our next program.
We are. With good old Theater 5, which was on in most places at 5 p.m. And I'm thinking maybe one of the reasons, because people were stuck in their cars, so they could listen to it. So that might be part of it.
Making rush hour bearable.
Yeah, a time when gas about 25 cents a gallon. that's a hallucination.
The good old days. And 65, I bet you gas was about 50 cents a gallon then.
Oh, my.
I think it's close because I remember in Buffalo, my dad went to the first self-service pump that there was in Tonawanda. Because he could save 3 cents a gallon, and he paid $29.9 back in probably close to 68. So CW was probably right with more of a quarter back then.
Hey, you might be right. You might be on it. Wow.
Really?
Wow.
I am? Wow. I was just taking a wild guess, but wow.
Yeah. But I remember that. It was, you know, because like half a block away was a full service station where they come out and pump it for you.
And emissions and mileage was so bad. They had massive gas tanks in there. You might only have to pay 25 cents a gallon, but you still had to pay a pretty penny to fill up like a 30-gallon tank.
Yeah, well, you got, what, 50, 60 feet a mile?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I got people I know that are complaining, well, it cost me $100 to fill up my tank, and I want to respond. But I don't want to. But I want to respond. So who told you to buy a vehicle that gets 8 to 12 miles to the gallon?
Well, there you go.
You know, because they get these big eight-cylinder trucks.
Hummers. You
know, they're nice to have. They are nice to have for certain jobs. It's good to have a big truck. But for everyday driving, that's insane. For me. For my budget.
I wish I knew how to drive a manual. I was never taught how to drive a manual. Those supposedly get superb gas mileage.
If you drive them well, you can save a lot on gas.
If someone could train me, but there's no school within, say, 500 miles.
Your school is get into a car with somebody who's really good with a stick to teach you.
That's the problem. I don't know anybody.
And what you do is find a big, giant parking lot. You know what I mean? With that, that's real empty, like on a Sunday night, and practice there.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
I know where the parking lot is. Get the vehicle, but I have nobody to teach me. I don't know anybody who drives a stick.
Yeah, I have a stick. Both my sons know how to drive a stick. I don't have a stick, but I did have a stick. And basically, I got behind the wheel. My buddy knew how to drive, and he took me out, trained me, and then said, okay, let's go up this hill. And he got out and let me be behind the wheel. So it was there were a few times that I got the engine to cut out on me, but you learn. I think the tougher part is because my brother
is what
loved.
You're screaming, oh, devil, as we go down the hill.
Yeah. As you're going backwards,
I rode a motorcycle before I drove a stick, and the idea of using a clutch came to me kind of quick.
Yeah. My brother loves a standard transmission, but he finds it harder and harder and harder to be able to buy one anywhere now.
Yeah.
So it's
when I was hunting for a car, I went online, went to three different dealerships, and for some reason, every time it was a vehicle I was looking at, they said, oh, I'm sorry, because it had manual transmission. I was saying, what is this, some sort of conspiracy against me? And we looked it up on the net. It said it's supposed to be automatic, but we just saw it. There's that third pedal in there, clutch thingy, whatever that thingy does.
They put those out front, and then when somebody gets there to buy it or to look at it, you find out it is a manual transmission. It's the old good old bait and switch. Here's the lower price. Oh, you wanted an automatic? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's why. Well, wouldn't have done it anyway. Yeah. I don't know how to do it, and I didn't have any other money.
Well, let's shift gears and get back to the devil with Mr. Horns Holiday. Yes. What a nifty title.
It was also interesting title. Dealerships as well, car dealerships, devils.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, those guys are, they're already there, I think, yeah.
Yes. That and loan sharks.
So, with no further ado, this one comes to us from ABC Radio on January 26th of 1965.
Theater 5 presents Mr. Horn's Holiday. Ladies and gentlemen, the world catastrophe is ended. But as you know only too well, civilization had a narrow squeak last year. Now that we've returned to normal, I must tell you what brought mankind to the brink of chaos, because in a way, I was responsible for it. To begin with, my name is Travis Webster, and I'm a painter. Not one of those far-out painters. My stuff is conventional. Seascapes, beach scenes, things like that. So I've had a hard time selling my work. Anyway, a little over a year ago, I finished a painting of the California beach and bungalow where I live with my wife, Helen, and submitted it to an art contest in competition for a $10,000 prize. I had 6 months to wait before the winning canvas would be announced, and meanwhile, Helen and I had a rough time trying to get our bills paid.
Travis, dear, something's bound to happen soon. I feel sure of it. So please try not to feel so depressed and miserable.
I'm sorry, sweetheart, but I can't seem to snap out of it. After all, I'm supposed to be the breadwinner of this combination. Some breadwinner.
But we do have this bungalow and our beach and ocean. Travis, I just had a sublime brain flash.
Oh?
Weary people plus their money equals ecstasy.
What does that mean?
We have a lovely spare room. So why don't we advertise for a guest? A paying guest.
Oh, no, Helen. That would be too big a burden on you.
No, I think it'd be exciting. I'm going to do it. I'm going to run an ad in our local paper.
Well, for about 5 months, we ran the ad in our local paper, but no rush of weary travelers. Until one morning when Helen was checking our ad in the paper.
Travis, did you see this?
See what?
This announcement on the art page. Here, look.
Oh, what's it about?
The $10,000 art contest.
Hey, I'd almost forgotten about that contest.
So had I, but here's the announcement about it. See? Right here at the bottom of the page.
Yeah. Yeah, it says the winner's going to be announced tomorrow.
Goodness, aren't you excited?
Well, sure, a little. But my painting hasn't got a chance.
Now, why do you say that?
Because it's too conventional, even though I think it's one of the best things I've ever done.
Then it has a chance to win. Oh, wouldn't you just love to win all that lovely money?
I'm sure I would, sweetheart, more than anything in the world. I'd sell my soul to win that $10,000. Yeah, just like Faust, I'd sell my soul. If Satan himself were to drive up right now, I'd willingly make a deal with him.
Travis.
Holy smoke.
Hi there. Is that the Webster residence?
Yes. I'm Travis Webster. Drive right up here to the steps.
Sure thing.
I don't recognize him. Do you, Travis?
No, but if he turns out to be Satan, I was only kidding.
Whoever he is, he certainly arrived on cue. Gives me the shivers. I'm covered with goosebumps.
I don't mind admitting that Helen and I were a bit startled by the stranger's arrival at just that moment. He was a short, smiling, middle-aged man, dressed and equipped like the typical American tourist. He wore a cap, sunglasses, and a wild Hawaiian shirt. And among the luggage in the back seat of his sports convertible were camera equipment and a bag of golf clubs. We walked down the steps to meet him as he stepped out of his car.
Well, now, this is great, simply great. What a magnificent location.
Yes, isn't it? Oh, I'm Helen Webster.
Well, greetings to both of you. My name's Horn.
Horn? You mean it?
Yep, Harry Horn. If you'd help me unload the back seat, I'd be much obliged, okay?
Yes, sure.
Now, I don't know if you realize it, Helen, my dear, but you've got a guest for your spare room.
Well, no, Mr. Horn, I didn't realize that. But you're certainly welcome.
Fine, fine. I'm going to be very happy here, I'm sure.
You saw our advertisement in the paper?
That's right. I was driving up the coast, hunting for a spot to spend a long vacation, when I saw your ad, and I knew this was the perfect place for old Harry Horn, this bungalow, the location, and you young Websters suit me to a T. The only question is, do I suit the young Websters?
Well, of course you do.
Well, that's good, because I'm planning to stay a year.
A whole year?
Yes, Travis, this is my sabbatical. And I'm not going to do a blessed thing for 12 months but eat, sleep, swim, and play golf. Well, while I'm thinking of it, take this envelope, will you?
Sure. What's in it?
Money, cash, payment in advance for a year.
Oh, that is necessary, Mr. Horn. I mean, you can pay by the week if you'd rather.
But I wouldn't rather. This is my year off, and I don't even want to think about money. And now, if you'll just carry these belongings to my room, I'm going down and wade in the ocean. I haven't had my feet in salt water for ages and ages.
Travis, how much is in that envelope?
Oh, I'll see. Holy cow!
What's the matter?
Helen? It's a pair of $1,000 bills.
What? I think I'm going to faint.
Well, if you're going to do that, wait till we get inside. I'll take the suitcases. You carry the golf bag.
All right, if I can.
Oh, watch out!
I'm sorry. I was too weak to hold it.
Well, stand the bag up, and I'll put the clubs back. Hey, these are expensive clubs.
Goodness, what kind of a golf club is that?
It isn't a golf club at all. It's a small pitchfork. The next morning, while our strange guest was out for a stroll, I received a registered letter from the judges of the art contest. It informed me that my painting had won the prize, and attached to the letter was a check for $10,000. When Helen saw the check, she almost collapsed.
Travis, I can't believe it. Is it real?
Yeah, sure it is, Helen. I've won.
I knew you would, darling. I was sure you... Oh, my goodness.
What's the matter?
Mr. Horn.
Uh-oh. Do you really think that he... Where is he?
I'm right here, Travis. Congratulations, my boy.
What for, Mr. Horn?
Winning the prize. I'm delighted.
But, Mr. Horn, how did you know Travis won?
Because I arranged it, naturally. Or perhaps I should have said supernaturally.
Then you really are who we think you are?
You know very well I am.
But why did you come here?
I told you to enjoy a year of relaxation, and believe me, I've earned a sabbatical. You have no idea of the problem that arises in my place of business. After millenniums of working like a demon, with no time off, I'm worn to a frazzle.
But, Mr. Horn, why did you come to this exact spot?
Well, that was sort of a coincidence. I just read your advertisement for a paying guest. When I became aware of your husband's statement that he'd willingly make a deal with me in order to win the contest. So, of course, I came instantly.
Oh.
Oh, now, come now, my dear. There's no need to carry on like this. You should be overjoyed. After all, Travers won the contest. He has $10,000.
Yes, but now you own Travis's soul.
Oh, that's nonsense. Forget it.
But you do own my soul, Mr. Horn.
Fiddlesticks. I don't need your soul, Travers. I'm up to my neck in souls. And to be frank with you, I'm pretty tired of that seedy Faust bargain. So keep your soul and your prize money and don't mention them again, okay? But I'm not going to let you back out on our bargain. I paid in advance for a year and I'm staying for a year. So let's not hear any more about it.
After all, Travis, Mr. Horn has been our benefactor. Without his influence, you mightn't have won the contest.
Well, maybe not. But I must admit my painting was superb. It really deserved to win. I think. And so Mr. Horn's holiday began. During the months that followed, we never mentioned our Faustian bargain, and Mr. Horn became our pleasant and fascinating companion. One evening before dinner, the three of us were sitting on the porch, relaxing over drinks.
May I fix you another highball, Mr. Horn?
Yes, Helen, you may. For a reason that should be obvious. I've become quite fond of fire water.
Say, how do you like that sunset? You ever seen anything to match those fiery colors?
Not on Earth, Travis. Not on Earth.
No, I suppose not.
Here you are, Mr. Horn. Just the way you like it. Not too much water.
Thank you, my dear.
You're frowning. Penny for your thoughts.
Eh? Oh, I was thinking about what's happening down home.
Oh, what is happening?
Oh, my junior assistants are messing things up rather badly. You know how it is when the boss is absent. They let the business go to Hades, as the saying goes.
Well, Travis and I certainly can't complain about that. Since you've been away from headquarters, some pretty wonderful things have been happening here on Earth.
Wonderful is hardly the word for it. I'd say phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree. But mankind has never had it so good.
That's true. Everything is changing in your favor. Take the matter of sin, for example. Have you noticed that sin no longer exists on Earth? That it's been replaced by morality? That nations and governments have discarded suspicion and belligerence and offer nothing now but the warm hand of friendship?
Yes, Mr. Horn, it's absolutely incredible.
Why, even the Russians are congenial. And I assure you, that took some doing. And juvenile delinquency, Where has that gone? It's vanished, of course. And respect for parents has taken its place. Shady business deals, bribery, corruption. What's happened to them? All are gone. Wiped out. Avarice, lust, depravity. Banished. Competition and conflict. Done away with. Even killing for food has come to an abrupt end. Neither humans nor animals will commit murder for the appeasement of hunger. I don't mean to boast, my friends, but for the first time in history, everyone everywhere is unafflicted, unvexed, and unplagued. Well, dear me, I'm afraid your firewater has loosened my tongue. Forgive me. That was a terribly long speech. Devilishly long.
He, the devil, is quite a character.
He's having fun with it. Yep.
Yes, yeah, he is.
Kidding. Very timely that he mentioned Russia.
I really enjoy the 60s music in these dramas. It's a lot of fun.
That it is. The music has a certain feel to it that brings me back to those days.
Which days?
They pick out. Yeah, which days?
Then there's 60s days.
Oh, well, those 60 days, okay.
Yes.
But, yeah, the orchestration and such, and, yeah, it's, a lot of it's used over and over. But still, it just, I think it's tremendous. And a lot of fun to hear that music in with the dramas.
It's wonderful. It's very well incorporated.
Yes, Mr. Horn is on holiday. Gosh, what would the devil do on holiday?
Nothing. And look what's happening. Good things are happening. Well, sort of.
I know. It's depressing. All this goodness and niceness.
Yeah. All the kids respecting their parents. Oh,
this is an outrage. Yeah, this is an outrage.
Beneath contempt.
Yeah. Indeed. No. Let us further assault your senses then as we wrap up Mr. Horns' holiday, and then who knows what might happen after that. Stick around.
While the land flowed with milk and honey, it never occurred to Helen and me that the paradise on earth might one day come to an end. But to our dismay, in the course of a few short weeks, a terrifying reaction began to take place. Without meat on the table, meals became a vegetarian bore. Butchers, packers, and cattle raisers were destitute. Owing to the disappearance of sin and vice, policemen, soldiers, lawyers, locksmiths, even representatives of the United Nations, found themselves without work. To make matters worse, without conflict, there was no drama. And with no drama in life, everyone became bored, bored, bored. And in addition to boredom, our hearts were filled with stark, shattering fear.
Travis, I'm afraid. Desperately afraid.
I know, darling. I am too.
Look, there are animals walking on the beach. Deer, rabbits, cattle. That's never happened before.
No, no. The animals are multiplying and overrunning the earth. The whole world is facing disaster, Helen, and you and I are the only living beings who know the reason why.
We've got to do something about it. I mean, this minute.
Yes, yes, darling, I agree. Mr. Horn has got to leave here and go back to Haiti.
My ears are burning. You must have been talking about me.
Mr. Horn, get out. I'm afraid of you.
What? Afraid of little old me? Why, Helen, I'm surprised at you.
Now, look, this is no laughing matter.
It is to me, Travis. I'm terribly amused.
But we're not. We're just plain scared. You know very well the chaos you've caused, so I want you to pack up and get out of here at once.
But, my dear boy, where do you want me to go?
Well, for all I care, you can go to...
You can't say the word, can you, Travers? Nobody swears anymore. What a pity.
Mr. Horn, will you please go away, for heaven's sake?
For heaven's sake? My dear Helen, I've never done anything for the sake of that district in my whole long career.
Oh, look, Mr. Horn, be reasonable. Your holiday from Hades has turned into a catastrophe on Earth. Doesn't that bother you just a little?
On the contrary, as I told you, it amuses me.
Amuses you? The misery you've caused amuses you?
Of course, my dear. And it pleases me as well. Well,
that's rot. How can it possibly please you?
Well, believe it or not, Travers, even I have a trace of egotism in my makeup. So I'm rather flattered to see that my talents, peculiar as they are, still bring results at this stage of my existence. You see, my dear friends, no one on Earth has ever had a speck of use for me. But soon, if you broadcast the news of my presence here, everyone will realize that I have a definite place in the universal scheme. I was created for one precise purpose, to make man's life exciting, competitive, and dramatic. I'm told that mosquitoes were created for the same reason. But that's beside the point. The point is, I refuse to cut my holiday short.
A few days later, when life had become almost intolerable, Helen and I decided once again to implore Mr. Horn to leave. To our surprise, owing to our abject pleading, he seemed to be less adamant than before.
Look, will you please get off your knees? You're breaking my heart.
Then you'll go, Mr. Horn? You'll really go away?
Well, I can't promise. But do you know something strange? Nobody's ever prayed to me before. I must confess, I'm touched.
So you do have some human feelings after all. That gives us hope, Mr. Horn. Please don't let us down.
Oh, it isn't a matter of letting you down, Travers. I'm thinking of my holiday. How would you like to have your vacation ruined?
Well, I wouldn't like it any more than I'd like to return my $10,000 prize, but I'll make a deal with you.
Oh, no. Not your soul again.
No, my prize. I really need that money, Mr. Horn, but if you'll promise to leave here right now, I'll send the money back. What's more, I'll give you back the cash you paid us for the year's rent.
Fiddle faddle, I won't accept it. Give it to charity. Give it to charity? Did I really say that?
Yes, you did. And I think it's just wonderful.
Well, then I'd better get out of here before I turn into a complete millsop. Travers, bring my car around. I'll start the packing.
It took Mr. Horn 10 minutes to pack up and get behind the wheel of his car. Helen and I went out to bid him farewell.
Well, dear friends, this is an unhappy moment for me. Back I go to the old grind with only a smidgen of a vacation. Don't you pity me just a little?
Yes, we do, Mr. Horn. I'm sorry it turned out this way, but Travis and I think you're very sweet. Don't we, Travis?
Yes, in a way, you're a real good Joe. Oh, don't look so gloomy, Mr. Horn. It makes me feel guilty.
Guilty? Are you kidding? Don't be naive.
What's so funny?
I just thought of a joke. And it's on you and Helen.
What kind of a joke?
Oh, a real devilish one, if you'll excuse the expression. The fact is, friends, I plan to leave now anyway. This wasn't a holiday at all. It was a project, all worked out to the minute in the most intricate detail.
What are you talking about?
Well, just between us and the lamppost, every step of this caper was planned deliberately to make people appreciate me and realize my value. You dig?
Yeah. Yeah, we dig.
Good. I'm off, then.
Safe journey, Mr. Horn.
Oh, thanks, sweetie. Oh, before I shove off, do you lovely people want to know a charming secret? In all my eons of committing mischief, I've never had so much doggone fun. Arrivederci.
So long, Mr. Horn.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, that's why our world returns so quickly to normal. I beg you not to judge Mr. Horn too harshly for the near catastrophe, or myself either, because I did try to make amends. I returned my $10,000.
But the contest judges sent it right back. They said my painting would have won anyway without Mr. Horn's intervention. And perhaps art itself is returning to normal. Who knows? And that makes Helen and me very happy indeed. Arrivederci.
Has presented Mr. Horn's Holiday, written by Albert G. Miller, produced and directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, David Burns, June Graham, and George Petrie. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
That's a bongo production, too.
I think it should be Dale's turn to give Gars more.
I agree.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Stick to me with it. Scrolling stuff here.
He's got to scroll in and look.
Yeah, you're making my brain hurt here. Erie House Radio. It's really regrets presenting this particular garrulous moral of the story. Damn it. Apologies to Gar. A happy devil is an unhappy devil. Or, in order to revel in chaos, first you have to understand order. Ooh. Oops, wrong soundbite. I'm an L. There we go. That was far more.
Order of fries and a large orange drink. Okay.
Large orange drink.
Big orange, yep. Well, in Erie House's mission to see anything, to go everywhere, and to do everyone, once again, I have gone on assignment to hell to interview the devil. This is Dave Binkley on assignment in hell for Erie House Radio, and I'm standing here with the devil. It's got to be 150 degrees here. Aren't you hot?
When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not.
A lot of people are sensitive about this, but could you tell me exactly how old you are?
I've been alive forever.
It took me a very long time to get here today. Can you tell me the quickest route here?
Venture Highway.
When people arrive in hell, what do they usually say?
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do.
You always seem to be working. When did you actually take your last day off?
The people were
it that some people want your services?
People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked inside, I'm out of range. I used to have things of change.
How can people contact you if they want to deal? If you see someone whose soul you want, what do you say to them?
I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you. Got my mind set on you.
What do you say will happen if they sell their souls to you?
We'll sing in the sunshine. We'll laugh every day. We'll sing in the sunshine.
Is there anything else that you promised them?
Anything you want, you got it. Anything you need, you got it. Anything at all, you got it.
And after they sign away their soul to you, is there any advice that you give them?
Don't sleep in the storm with darling. Don't stand in the pouring rain.
What do you say if someone wants to buy back their soul?
And all your money won't another minute buy.
When someone whose soul belongs to you runs away and hides, what do you say to them?
Oh, I've waited, but I'll wait forever for you to come to me.
Well, Mr. Devil, thank you for your time. I have to return to Erie House. So, do you have any last thoughts you want to leave us with? For Erie House Radio, this is Dave Binkley. Man, this place is hot. It's hotter than the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders' dressing room.
Very nice, very nice.
I had another one, but only sports fans would have recognized it. It went something like that. Man, this place is hot. It's hotter than the sauna house that Deshaun Watson took me to.
Wow. Wow. That's local, too, now.
It is local, too, now. Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
But nicely, very good, well put together. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, man,
very
that
well
was
done,
hot.
Benny
I'm
Goodman.
Telling you. You mean Dickie? Oh, no, I'm Dickie, Benny. That's
yeah.
his brother, huh?
Yes.
I'm his brother, Benny, yeah.
Dickie Goodman, yes. He did so many of those great records, recordings of those.
He did. I have very a whole well album of his stuff. It's fun stuff. It's featuring Mr. Jaws, yeah. But there's a whole album of them there. Yeah.
Tomorrow night, another devilish tale from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Mysterious Stranger. Join us as we hope and pray that our dear friend Gar gets well soon. Damn it. And maybe, just maybe, there'll be a horrible horror coming soon. Starring Gar the Ghoul.
To a Twitch near you.
Yeah. So we'll be back at 6:30 tomorrow Eastern. Hopefully you'll be with us, CW, if you can make it. And it's CBS Radio Mystery Theater. My own little Satan.
Yeah, again, it's a tale. It is a tale from Mark Twain. So that much more fun. Yeah.
You know there will be some humor in there. Yeah, thanks everyone for joining us. GGSI Paper, who stepped out. Fosbane, thank you. And the rest of us. And everyone in Sweden that's listening. Believe it or not, there's a handful. There's a handful.
There are.
Yep.
But I'm sure that we can take care of that in time.
That's right. Yeah, just enough to Just a nice time to drag Vincent Price over to the microphone to say good night.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Oh, man. That was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Quite by accident. Quite by accident. Boy.
Yeah.
I've found
Hello
that.
Hello to Sweden.
Yep. Hi, Sweden. Thank you for joining
yep.
us.
Sweet. Yeah, please. Thank you so much. Hope you can join us tomorrow for a fun little tale. This was that, you know, last one was a fun one. And look forward to sharing these Mark Twain tale tomorrow. They actually had ended up with a whole week of Twain stories. One was the missing elephant. One was the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. Another time travel story. And what was the other one where he was walking there? The Death Bells, I think it was called. So,
well,
it was just as they had an O. Henry week and had some really interesting tales there. So,
I hate to poop out on you guys, but I have got a little Richard Boone lookalike upstairs who's crossing his legs.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
With that being said.
Well, yeah, poop away. Yeah. Poop away, Dale.
Yeah. Yeah, so by all means, that will give me a quick opportunity to call the one and only Mr. Durante to the stage to say us farewell.
See y'all tonight, tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more is this safe but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Boom, boom. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.